Good morning. My name is Randy Lawrence. I'm from Michigan State University. And my project is actually part of a larger project sponsored by the United Soybean Board that includes nine states. We have eight universities working on this. The first five authors there are graduate students that I've been working with, and they're all going to be speaking. Bryson actually spoke yesterday. The others will be speaking later today. And so I'm going to be talking about my portion of this project, which is specifically the quality component. The project itself looks at many different inputs, farmer inputs, agronomic inputs, with the specific purpose of increasing yield. I'm looking at the grain portion now. How do these inputs affect the quality of the grain, and what does it change? So the soybeans are one of the most common, or are the most common source of isoflavones in human food. I'm going to talk mostly today about the isoflavones. The three major isoflavones are genistein, diazine, and glycine. And the two that I worked with in our lab are the two, the genistein and diazine, and you can see those are the ones that are at the highest percentages in a soybean plant. The isoflavones are, you can actually buy them in a health store. They have a lot of claims to reducing breast cancer, prostate cancer, menopausal symptoms, heart disease, osteoporosis. So quite a few things that they claim to help with as far as your health is concerned. Also, plants use isoflavones for their own health to ward off diseases and other things. So the object was to determine if the agronomic inputs that we put on our plants in the field had any effect on genistein and diazine in our lab. So I have to introduce the project. We had 16 treatments in a randomized complete block design. This experiment was grown across nine states. I only analyzed the two locations in Michigan, so that's where I'm going to talk about for my data. But if we look, the number one is untreated control, or the untreated check. Number two, BioForge was used as an antioxidant. Then we had a series of seed treatments, starting with a fungicide seed treatment, a fungicide with insecticide, a fungicide insecticide with biologicals, and then we had LCO. We used Optimize on the seed, and then we use Ratchet as a foliar. We tried a defoliant, Cobra, a Task Force foliar fertilizer. Number eight was a fungicide only, an insecticide only, and then number 10, a fungicide and insecticide together as one of our treatments. And then number nine, we actually put nitrogen on, 75 pounds of urea and another 75 pounds of ESN. Not actual nitrogen, but that's the product itself. The next set here we called the SOYA, and SOYA stands for the Systematic Optimization of Yield Enhancing Applications. That's where the acronym comes from. So basically, treatment number 12 is the number five, the highest level of all of the seed treatments, plus the foliar fertilizer, the foliar fungicide, the insecticide, and the nitrogen. So basically, everything except the defoliant we put on there, we called that SOYA. So number 13, the next ones then, we took the SOYA complete and systematically removed one or two of the applications to basically say, okay, if we're getting a response, which components of these are actually contributing to the response. So my fields were planted six rows, 15-inch row spacing, 30-inch guest row, so I could walk down with a sprayer and take notes and different things. They were 40 feet long. Alleys were trimmed to 34 feet, which comes to 10.4 meters. If we actually put that in meters, it would be our harvest length. And so the grain was bagged then. Our plot combine couldn't handle 40-foot row, so I actually had to bag the entire plot and bring it in and weigh it. The timing and rate of these products was basically whatever was recommended by the product and whatever a farmer would use. We're trying to imitate what a farmer would be using. So these were all sprayed with a backpack at various stages. Getting near harvest, the plots look like this. The alleys are trimmed. This is actually this year's plot. The green ones, this is all one variety, by the way, throughout the entire plot. It's an as-grow variety. And the ones you see there in green were the defoliant. They really showed up quite well. The defoliant was sprayed at V4, but here we are getting near harvest, and you can see it held on to the green color. John Orlowski is going to talk more about the yield portion of this trial at 10:15 today. So I'm not going to get much into that, but I do want to show one slide. This is all of the locations across the United States, not just the Michigan locations. And this is 2 years of data, 2012 and 2013. And you can see here we did get some responses in yield. These are in bushels per acre. So the untreated control, of course, is number one, if you want to compare everything to that. This particular data set did get some response to BioForge that was significant. The ones with the stars are significant. Some of the other data sets, when you break them out, the BioForge didn't always have a result. Looking over further down, foliar insecticide and foliar fungicide with the insecticide. And then, of course, once you get to the soya, you can see how the yield levels were higher when we combined these treatments together. So I would encourage you to stay and watch John's presentation and some of the other USP presentations. The actual isoflavones then were determined by a HPLC. We had a process from Frankie that we modified somewhat. We did purchase standards, genistein and diazine, so we could calibrate the machine properly. And this is the actual picture of the HPLC machine that we used, and this one had the photodiode detector on it. So real briefly and real simply, the soybean seed was ground into a flour. 0.4 grams was weighed out into a centrifuge type tube with a cap on it. 4 milliliters of 53% acetonitrile added to it. We shook it. We shook it up first good by hand and then put it in a shaker for 2 hours. And then we had to run it through a centrifuge to get the flour and things to go down to the bottom of the tube so we could pull off the liquid on top. And it was too potent to run through the HPLC machine as it was. We would get too high of peaks and it wouldn't clean out the column between samples. So we had to dilute the sample using deionized water. And then this was put into the HPLC trays and run through the system. The output looks something like this. You would get a peak whenever. These are actually the standards. The genistein is the top one. Diazine is the middle one. They're actually not on the same scale. So if you go to the bottom, you see them both on the same scale. The genistein is the taller one. When you run an actual sample through, you get many, many peaks. And then you match up the time. This, you can see it's 5 minutes of time there. So you say, okay, the peak that happened at 2.62, that's the genistein. And you know how much you had there in your sample. The 2012 MSU plot had a severe drought, and it had some spider mites come in on the west side. I thought it might have affected the quality, so I left that out. When running analysis, the top one there, the 2012 Breckenridge, didn't show any significant difference. So if we just eliminate that one and look at the other two, again, you can see with the ABCs, it's kind of confusing to look at these, and I wrote them a different way, and I'll show you in a minute. Treatment number one, of course, remember, was the untreated control. Treatment number seven kind of shows up in the bottom chart. That's our defoliant. Starting with number 12 there is the soya, and then moving on from there. Genistein, we only had true significant difference at Breckenridge in 2013. 2013 MSU was almost, that had a p-value of 0.06. You can see the trend there from genistein to diazine at a particular location seemed to match itself fairly well. But if we just look at the one that was significant, again, it's kind of hard to tease out the data and say, okay, what does that mean now? I can see everything against the control. Number 13 is real high. Okay, that was the one that had soya with the defoliant in it, so that doesn't seem to match what we had in the previous chart. So I took all of the locations, all three locations, whether they were significant or not, and just ran them together, basically looking all of the treatments that had nitrogen against all the treatments that didn't have nitrogen. And there was no difference there, but you can see the defoliant had quite a bit of significant difference. You can see down at 0.05 or 0.01, I just put in the stars instead of the actual p-value. So you can see the defoliant had quite a significant difference. Foliar fungicide had some, bioforage and foliar fertilizer. Genistein, somewhat the same. This one actually showed a difference with nitrogen, not the defoliant, the foliar fungicide, quite a bit on the insecticide. So the conclusions then, basically management does appear to influence the isoflavones. Year and environment had a great effect. There was quite a bit of effect of that. I'm going to add 2014 data to this and run some more. So also looking at the fatty acid profile, I don't have that in my presentation today. We've been running some running these in the lab. I don't have all the analysis done yet, but we are looking at the fatty acid profile to see if any of these treatments affect your oleic acid, your linoleic, things like that, and total oil content. I have also noticed that the way you store these, whether you store them in the warm or in the cold, also tends to have an influence on this. So we're learning a lot as we go here, and have one more year of data to go in there. So thanks to Kurt Thalen, my major professor, John Boyce, Pavani, and then the United Soybean Board, who sponsored the large project, and the Michigan Soybean Promotion, who has sponsored the Michigan portion and the lab quality component. Thank you. Yes.
Do you think different soybean varieties have different
level of yes. This is called study number one out of about four studies. Study number two had different varieties in it, six different varieties, and I have analyzed some of those. I didn't analyze very many locations, and I haven't run the actual statistics on it yet, but I would expect that they would. Probably one variety to another would have somewhat of a difference. As far as we can tell, they seem to act nearly the same with the field agronomic. If a defoliant raises one, it probably raises another variety. If it lowers it, it probably lowers. So from one variety to another, there probably are some differences. The agronomic things may not change. Yes? The question is, why did we...
You didn't quantify diversity. I know some of the lowest concentrations.
Oh, the units here, I guess maybe I should have said, the units here are nanograms per microliter on the side, which in the lab we use nanograms per microliter. In the field, that would be grams per kilogram, if you want to think of it that way. Did that answer your question? No. Okay.
I said why you didn't quantify glycine.
Why I didn't?
Quantify genistein, diacetyl, but you didn't quantify the third isoflavone.
Oh, I'm sorry. The third one. I guess I don't have a good answer. It was at a lower level and hard to pick out the peaks in the. It seemed that the data was quite dirty. And harder to, because it's at such a low level, it was hard to sort out from all of the other peaks of the other chemicals in the soybean plant.
Let's thank Randy one more time.
All right.